Welcome to the Always Better Than Yesterday podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Hartley. This podcast exists to equip and inspire your heart-centered leadership. Every week, we bring interviews with some of the greatest heart sets and mindsets on the planet. I hope the heartprint of our time spent together is that it creates new possibilities for you and all those you come into contact with. If you'd like to explore what we could make possible for you, then head to abty.co.uk/connect and book in a free 30-minute call to begin our journey. On episode 252, I'm joined by Dr. Evelyn Higgins, international expert in the epidemiology of substance use disorders, process addictions, and mental health conditions. You'll have to check out Dr. Evelyn's full bio to see the incredible work that she has done in her 30-year career as a doctor. These include supporting Olympic teams, sports teams, and influencing at a national level with government lawmakers. In our conversation, we talk about her work with her company Wired for Addictions, talking all things addiction and mental health. I hope you enjoy the conversation. It is episode 252 with Dr. Evelyn Higgins. Dr. Evelyn, welcome to the Always Better Than Yesterday podcast. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you, Ryan?
Yeah, very well. Very well. It must be something about timing. Last week, I had a conversation with Dr. Andrew Hill, and Dr. Andrew talked a lot about brainwaves and scanning of brains and a way of being able to help us understand. If we just understand the way that things were going on in here, maybe we'll be predisposed to certain things in our external life, giving us the opportunity to make some tweaks and some changes to live more in harmony with that which is within. And I'm looking forward to this conversation because we're going to get into a deep conversation about genetics. Genetics. Tell us about how did you become someone that got involved and is now a CEO of an organization involved in genetics?
Sure. So professional life, I was a doctor who practiced in the area of pain management and saw, this is 30 some years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm in a rural area. I'm seeing kind of a try this, try that approach to people's health. And I'm not seeing the results. Mm. I'm seeing people become a little bit dependent. Now, this is 30 years ago. 20 years after that, I'm in an urban area and think, okay, things are going to be different here. We're going to do things differently. Same thing. And you know, 20 years later, and nothing had changed. Try this, try that, doesn't work, half it, double it. And see people move from dependency towards addiction. Mm-hmm. More than that, in my personal life, I had married an alcoholic, and we had a child together. A year after she is born, we find out that he's adopted. So now I'm seeing these behaviors in him. I know nothing of family history. And I said, whoa, I've got to know everything that I can possibly know to navigate the waters for my child. And nothing had evolved as far as science goes in that area. It was still archaic. And in other areas of health, technology had advanced and those applications were being used. And in the area where I was, none of it was being employed. So really, for even my personal passion was, we've got to get these things moving. And started doing a lot of research, you know, threw myself into that world. Fast forward to where we are today.
Yeah. Well, I was just sat here before you joined the call, just engaging with the possibilities of your work. You know, there are such implications for leadership, the criminal justice system, early years, education, parenting. There are so many implications, but I think you really drew it to a real clear, crisp one-liner in your TEDx talk, which is that if you'd have known, it could have changed. Could it have changed
exactly
your life, your husband's life, and your daughter's life? And
right.
Why do you think this stuff's life-changing?
Because every whether it be neurotransmitter, hormone, genetic, what we call a SNP, a single nucleotide polymorphism. Polymorphism just meaning, not to get too sciencey, but just meaning that there's an error in the genetic coding. If we isolate that and measure it, we can then say, okay, what is this doing? What we call a clinical correlation. What's the clinical correlation here? How does that make you think? Therefore, how does that make you act out? Well, if we can look at these things and say we all have our strengths, we all have our weaknesses, we all have our good, we all have our bad, we all have our dark, we all have our light. If we can illuminate those things and say, okay, how can we optimize this? That gives us an opportunity to live such an incredible life instead of just kind of doubling down on this is me, woe is me, this is where I am, when it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah, I'm a psychology graduate, and there's always these terms in academia, and there was a time where the genes were, well, this is it. This is your path. This is your destiny. You are your genes, right? Oh, there's no effect I can have. And a couple of years ago, we were fortunate to be joined by Dr. Bruce Lipton, who is known as the grandfather of epigenetics. So we know better, right? We know more about the interaction with our environment and the genes, but there's still this word predisposed. And I guess, what is it that your work's really tapping into to help us understand, because I know that you work very closely with people involved in trauma and how that interacts with dependencies and addictions. What is it that you think is the hallmarks or the tags that are getting your attention to say, hey, there's a predisposition here?
Well, in some, I'll just kind of back up to what you said about,
Yeah,
our
please.
DNA we thought was boom, here it is. Yeah, and it still is, people, here's your cards, play it out. This is your DNA. And that's true, right? Here's your cards, this is your DNA. But this whole study of epigenetics is where the game changer is. And to me, that gives the power back to the individual, right? Because here's your set of cards, but we don't have to see all of those parts to it, right? And that's where the epigenetics comes in. So knowing that that doesn't have to remain fixed is the part that's really exciting. And to know that someone's behavior can change as a result of the expression of that gene is where the incredible part is. And we did start in the criminal justice system with what we do. With people incarcerated, and we would go into prisons and do our lab tests. And if someone, you are penalized for what's happened, you serve your time, great. But if you don't change the behaviors that got you there, it is going to be the exact same thing. It's just how long does it take?
It's
And
changing. Sorry, Karen.
no.
I was going to say it's changing the lens on it, isn't it? I spent 13 years in the UK Police Service. It's my background
Oh, okay.
before this, and there was the emergence of a trauma-informed practice, which is also the understanding that the offender can also be a victim, or at least have been a victim at some time in the past. So it gives a different perspective that people aren't just wired for this type of, like, what we might say is negative or antisocial behavior. It's actually something either what you're talking about is like deeper wired, or there has been some interaction within the environment in their earlier years.
And that trauma is more than just a word to quantify a negative experience. It changes our physiology. So from your neurotransmitters, the brain chemicals, to your hormones, your stress hormone, that and how that interacts to your sex hormones, and then how those play out in those polymorphisms that we talked about. So it really, it's a complex picture that is actually broken down to steps. That there's each step along the way that gets us to the next step. And to that's just a game changer for people. And who, when we talk about trauma, everybody's got some trauma in their life, whether it be a little T, a big T, and it then it's how you react to it and what that does to your physiology. Even when we talk about addiction, I say that it's either from a condition that hasn't been diagnosed properly, or a diagnosed condition not being treated properly, or a trauma, or one, two, or all three of those things that get us to reach outside of ourselves to try to bring something in to change the resting state of who we are. You have to look at that. And it always starts with self-medicating, and a person doesn't even realize that that's what they're doing to change that resting state or their homeostasis.
And then I heard you said this one line: it works until it doesn't.
Exactly. And when you find that self-medicating part of you, you're like, oh my gosh, this is it. Eureka, I found it. Because initially you feel good. And for those people, they'll still describe, I was 4 years old and I remember feeling this. I was 10 and I remember feeling this. Because all of a sudden they feel like, whoa, I can now feel like I can move through this life. And it works until it doesn't work. And then that becomes your next problem.
Yeah, because sometimes it's not the addictive substances. Sometimes it's just the food. Sometimes it's
Absolutely.
ice cream. Sometimes it's the use of social media and scrolling. And I think sometimes it's having the courage and the bravery to look into the mundane and go, ah, like I'm not being conscious about my behavior. What and yeah, it's really interesting because I know that whenever I get stressed, say I get a bit overwhelmed, I'm immediately trying to distract myself.
Right.
That's my thing. And then I, so now that I have an awareness of that, I can go, oh, well, how am I, what am I using to distract myself? Right. And how might I come back to the world in a healthy way?
Yeah, and you use a great word, courage, because it does take courage to actually look at yourself honestly. It's easy to be a victim of everything. It's easily just to say, you know, this is my environment, just roll with it. But it takes courage to actually look at yourself, become responsible for your behavior, whether that was imposed upon you or not, and say, now, what am I going to do about it? I call it the honesty inventory. And only you can be honest with yourself, right? It's not what your spouse thinks, your partner thinks, what your teacher thinks. It's you, you know? And if your world is not working honestly, you have to say, what do I need to do to change it and really go through? Is it this? Is it that? Is it all of it?
Yeah, I've read the work of Dr. David Hawkins, and he's more around kind of consciousness. And I kind of took two things away from him really around the use of substance. One was that sometimes that substance can be a gateway to an elevated state, a more desirable, physiology state. And
Right.
sometimes it's about alleviating the experiences of a lower state, fear, guilt, shame, anger, grief. In your experience, what would you come at that perspective with, substance and usage? Is there a spirit element to it? What state are people ultimately trying to either attain or avoid?
Sure, they're trying to either avoid or change that resting state of that be it the anxiety, the general unhappiness, that depression, that mood, trying to elevate it to something else. Or is it the behaviors of fear or shame or I'm not good enough? You think of like people that will, pregame, before they go somewhere, they have a few drinks because of that social anxiety. So you're trying to change that I'm not enough state. You know, so it can be from so many different reasons, but it all it does boil down to those things of inside, who do we feel like we really are? And a lot of people never really get to that point of the courage, as you say, to be able to do the work to get to that point, to really fillet themselves wide open, say, who am I? Am I being my optimal self? Am I being less than? And then if it's less than, why? And be honest with yourself. Is it because of fear? Is it because of shame? Is it because of I just can't show up in the world without being anxious that I'm not enough?
Yeah, and you go as far as saying that therefore addiction is not a moral flaw.
Right. It's not a moral flaw and a disease. You know, we wouldn't say to somebody who has diabetes, well, just don't eat that. You know what's going to happen to you, just don't eat it. We look at it as if it's a disease because disease is when you're not in the state of normalcy of what you should be. So looking at it like it's a flaw and beating that person down, we've got to put the lens on it. But it is no one would willfully want to operate that way. And wake up one day and say, I've lost my family, I've lost my friends, I've lost my job, I've lost my home. That's not the way it happens. And it's kind of on a scale. We're not healthy one day here and sick the next here. It's all the living that we're doing in between that brings us to either side of that.
Well, it's having the compassion to see that all of that is a manifestation of something going on far great, greater inside, isn't it? Like that's just the manifestation, because I think it's very easy, particularly with a number of biases, where we just see that people are their behavior. It's
Exactly,
like we give
exactly.
ourselves grace and space sometimes, but we assume that other people are their behavior. And Imagine Dragons have a wonderful lyric. From a leadership perspective, I use it all the time. It says, "I am an apostrophe, just a symbol to imagine that there's more to me." And I think that seeing people as apostrophes is just a very simple thing for me to
I
go,
like.
there's something more to see that is not available to me right now.
I like that. I like that, and that's so true. You know, it's kind of like we're simple yet complex at the same time. Yeah, and it's like we're the ones who get in our own way of letting all of that come out.
Because we've got ourselves and all the complexities of what it means to be a human being, and then you place us in a goldfish bowl of culture, which I'm sure we might get to a bit later, but that's a whole kind of beast in itself. Particularly when the first thing that kind of came to mind is that you were a doctor in the pain management. I watched a documentary, or it was a TV series called Dope Sick, and
Great.
that blew my mind. I had no idea that the world was like that in the pharmaceutical side of things, and that kind of really exposed, and that must be quite soul destroying, I guess, for someone, because often you go into these fields of work, right? Young, everyone's like, what do you want to be when you're older? I want to help people,
Help people,
right? And then you must be in work and going, I don't feel like I'm helping people. Things seem to be getting worse.
And you look at the burnout that exists within healthcare workers. And that's exactly why it's like I came here to help people. I'm in this system where my hands are tied. I can't do the work I wanted to do. And now we have people, you know, at a level of where societally people are generally not as kind as they were before. You know, so now you're trying to help people and you're getting beat up every day for trying to help people. They're like, okay, there's got to be a better way for me to go through my day. But to talk about Dope Sick, I think that's something that everybody should watch, just so you have the real picture of how the whole system works.
The business model.
Yep. The business model, and it's for people to stay in the swirl and never get out of it.
How does that affect you, being a professional, speaking about times like that? Does that make it does it make it uncomfortable for you? Does it put pressure on your profession?
From myself and who I am, I'm comfortable talking about it because I guess I don't take myself all that seriously, that I'm worried about everybody's gonna come and attack me. And will people? Yeah. I mean, I've had people say to me, I'm surprised that you are still talking the way you are and that, you know, no one's tried to shut you up. I'm like, some people have tried to shut me up. They have. But you know what?
Great. Well, the truth prevails. Truth
Yeah.
prevails.
Yeah.
What is it about, what is your hope for the genetic testing? I'm thinking about it from a leadership perspective, and I'm not too sure of the ethics of me trying to profile everyone in my team or in my business, but what are the kind of practices that you would have people take, when they
Sure.
w if they wanted to explore this further?
Sure. Great question, Ryan. I mean, what I would see in the future is just that it becomes an entry-level lab test, just like we do a CBC, a complete blood count. How many white blood cells? How many red blood cells? How many neutrophils and eosinophils? Are you healthy? Is there any pathology? That it would be that same way. Here's your starting point. And I wouldn't say that it profiles people because we've all got something that needs to be optimized, whatever it is. You know, so it's just identifying and I don't see any part that has a negative consequence to that. I only see the upside.
If it's used with its, because I, so it's a vulnerable thing, isn't it, for someone to have some information about me that I don't know how they're going to interpret, right? Do I get excluded for certain opportunities because I have a predisposition for work addiction? Whereas 5, 10 years ago, I'd be promoted very quickly because I've got a work addiction. It's.
Well, you know what? I would use the same analogy as companies that want someone to say the Myers-Briggs test, the personality test, because they want to know where to put them, where they're really going to serve best and lead best.
Yes.
So this is the exact same thing. I mean, what? How do we make better what you've got, and where are you going to be the best by seeing who you are? And it just elevates someone to a position of being all that they can be in the capacity
right.
they're at.
Well, the word is genetics, gene, which is the root of genius. How can we be a genius if we're not operating from our fullest genetic
Brilliant.
Expression?
Brilliant. Exactly. Brilliant. And that's a perfect analogy and a question. How can we be if we're not operating at our maximum? And don't you want to?
So if I was to take my genetic testing as a curious individual, what might I be looking at? What might it reveal to me?
Example, when it comes to what we're talking about with pain management and that kind of thing, mood elevation, look at a genetic SNP that says, is an SSRI drug or an antidepressant going to be effective for you? I can't tell you the amount of people that have been on an SSRI or multiple, usually, for decades, that come to us and are still down in the dumps. We identify that. There are tears, but of joy. Because they're saying, this wasn't me wanting to be this way. This was actually what was going on, but nobody took the deeper dive to figure that out and be able to tell me that. That's a game changer for people. But what that does to someone's psyche, if you have half a dozen physicians telling you, take this, you're going to be better. And then you're like, Doc, I'm not. And then they put it back on them. It's because you don't want to be.
Yeah.
And then that just makes somebody start to believe that
it's a
that
reinforcement.
Is
yeah.
Right.
It's a real...
Right. Or looking at, say, genes of methylation or of autophagy, kind of like the garbage man of the cells, you know, cells die off. All this garbage has to get out of us. If it's not, we literally feel like garbage. Right. So all of these things that we identify and say, okay, how do we change this? What within those biochemical pathways needs to be done for us to optimize and get to the end result that we want to get to? Or example, the COMT gene, catecholamine methyltransferase, it makes someone more prone to anxiety and depression and sit in that longer. So say this morning, it's morning for me here. I haven't been out in the world yet, but let's just say after this, I get in my car, I go somewhere, somebody cuts me off. And by tonight, I'm still telling everybody about that person that cut me off and ruined my day. And somebody says, just let it go. I'm like, but I can, it's still in me. Well, if we identify that, we now have a conversation with you of like, that's why you sit in those things. Whoa, light bulb goes off. You know what? You're right, I do. Can that change? Yes. With epigenetics, we can change how that plays out. You still got to do your work. You've got to recognize it. You know, a lot of times when physiologically people are feeling different, they're like, no, I feel different. Now I realize my habits have to change. Correct. Right.
Yeah. It's really interesting, isn't it? Because you've got the polarity, you've got the, oh, I'm not, you know, it's there, it's written, it's in my genes, therefore I have no responsibility.
Exactly.
And that's not, I guess, the purpose of knowing, isn't it? Because once we know better, we can do better.
Exactly. And exactly right. It's not to sit there. It's to say, okay, what do we do? How do we improve upon that? You know, if we knew within someone's family history, there was cancer or there was heart disease, we would share that with them.
Yeah.
We would say, you need to be aware of this. You need to live your life with lifestyle choices that are going to best serve you. But when it comes to this aspect of things, we're just kind of quiet. We don't say anything. You know, if there's a conversation, it's like, you know, Uncle Joe, boy, he really throws a few back at every holiday, gets a little wacky and wants to start a family fight. That's about as much that people are going to talk about that. No, it's just like any other part of your health. If we know about it, we can do about it.
Yeah, it's incredibly powerful because I think, you know, I think in the work of Bruce Lipton, he talks about the Lamarckian theory of evolution. It's 1809. I won't quote the whole thing, but one of the things that Lamarck was quoted as saying is that human beings will suffer when we don't live in harmony with that which is sustaining this nature, right? It's nature sustained. And
Right.
this is what we're talking about here, is like this is helping us understand our inner nature so that we may live in harmony with it. If we're suffering in some way, so often the result is that's because I'm flawed rather than I'm not living in harmony. Because the first one says, oh, well, I'm flawed. That's defeatist. It's this self-fulfilling prophecy. I have no worth. I am what they say I am. The other one says, huh. So this is an invitation to come back into alignment with the way that I could be, or maybe haven't been.
Perfectly said. Exactly right. And that is the difference. It's okay, here's what's happening with you. Let's tweak this. Let's get this to where it can be. And now you are going to be living that life that you're academically, intellectually wanting, but not arriving at. When I get back a lab test and there's a lot of markers that we've got to optimize, I'll say, this is the good news. If we had gotten back a perfect lab test, I'd say, Ryan, I don't know how to help you. But the good news is that there's so much that can be optimized, you're going to be in a better place.
Yeah. How do you triangulate the treatment then? So you've got the measuring, you've got the ability, the insights, the foresights. How does, I mean, this is probably too difficult a question for the spectrum of people you help, but what might a pathway or a protocol look like moving forward for someone that has identified addictive traits within their genetics?
Sure. So it would depend on the individual markers
Sure.
that we're seeing and where they are, but generally it would be all right. What are the precursors of this, the steps that we're not getting right? We're not getting to the end result we need. What are the precursors within those biochemical pathways? What are those biosynthesis precursors that we don't have, that we're not able to make those steps work correctly? That can be from, as I said, biosynthesis precursors, what needs to be supported there. It can be pharmaceutical, it can be a hybrid of both, it could be compounded pharmaceutical. It just depends on what's happening with that individual. Because here's the thing, what, 7.5 billion people in the world, 7.5 billion different sets of DNA, yet we treat everybody like they're exactly the same.
Right.
Makes no sense.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
it's to the point of really individualized precision, looking at what genetic weakness. We all have weaknesses. We have strengths, we have weaknesses. We've got to address the weaknesses just as much as we do as the strengths, and then run with it.
Funny, isn't it? Because I have children, I have a son and a daughter. My son is 11, my daughter's 8, and they express their genes very differently. they're the same genes, as in they have the same mum and dad. But they're genetically very different, expressive human beings. And it's so funny, isn't it? Because, like, let's just give an example, right? My daughter, she's very creative, but she's also, as a byproduct, very messy. Let's just say her bedroom is a creative explosion of things, right? My wife is like, why can't you do this? And I'm like, I'm not sure she sees it that way. I'm not sure that there's something in her that grasps the concept. So we're not the same. It's too easy to just to project our own world onto somebody else and expect, why can't they do that?
She doesn't see it the same way. She's like, it's just a little bit of that, but right now in my mind, I'm creating this, which is so much more important, right?
Yeah.
But then we've got to temper those things to get
Yeah.
ourselves through life and be part of the bigger picture, not just operating on our own. But yeah, I mean, we're all wired differently, and we can optimize all that we have. Why wouldn't we want to do that?
Yeah, I mean, we're living in a state where I think particularly young people are really suffering with mental health conditions. And it's clearly not appropriate just to be funneling them full of chemicals. Because I think that for me meant the underlying belief there must be that there's something wrong. And I don't believe that, I have a faith, and I don't believe that we're mass made wrong. I fail to accept that there's a flaw in humanity as such that we have to give them a man-made chemical to
Agreed.
balance them out, right? So, I guess for the parents that are listening and they're aware and they're alive to the mental health conditions that are playing out, what is it that they can do? Do you think that's going to support or at least harness their genetic expressions of their
So,
children.
yeah, so for me, the starting point is looking at your physiology. You know, then we go to
Right.
that other steps. What's your environment? How are you reacting to that? What's going on with your friends? All those different
Yeah.
things, age dependent on where a child is navigating through their life. But, you know, the brain's not fully formed till somewhere between 24, 27 years old. If we start altering that with medications prior to that formation and medications that we really don't know what is going to be the result of that, you know, and that's the part that's not told. When it's like, here, this is what we think your child needs, here, take it. You know, there are times when that's where we have to go, but the most conservative route should always be chosen first, and then do all of the other steps of, okay, what do we need to do to support from a conservative way? There's not a single cell in our body that's made up of a pharmaceutical. If you think about that.
Yeah.
Yet that is our go-to.
Yes.
There's something wrong. Here, take
Yeah.
this. Well, why? Because I don't have enough of it? Do I have a headache
Yeah.
because I don't have enough Tylenol in my body? Do I have ADD because I don't have enough Ritalin in my body? No. Let's take the time to investigate on that cellular level what's happening that's not working efficiently. Do we have too
Yeah.
much of it? Do we have too little of it? Because we're not getting the end result that we need.
Yeah, and you said earlier SSRIs, which in my understanding is selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, right? I think the purpose of those is to keep the presence of serotonin in the synapse. Am I in the right understanding that actually that too much use of SSRIs reduces the natural production of serotonin? Is that not a
Sure.
paradox? Is that not like a
Yeah,
contradictory thing that we want to have
exactly.
happen?
Exactly. And that's the whole, well, what's going to happen to that individual 20 years later, 30 years later, when your body can no longer make what it's supposed to be making because you've interrupted it and saying, here you go, this is all you need.
And what's the importance of serotonin, particularly within our kind of, is that the one that gets us, it's not dopamine, is it, which gets us going after goals? What's the purpose of serotonin? How does that play out in our physiology and our feeling?
Sure. So serotonin, kind of that mood regulation, but
Right,
we
right.
jump on it for a depression when really depression can have to do with four things: serotonin, dopamine, epinephrine, norepinephrine. But we just, because there's so many SSRI drugs, we jump at here, take this. And that's why so many people don't get what they're trying to get as a result of it, because that was
Yeah.
never where the problem was. But serotonin could have to do with our sleep regulation, with, and interestingly enough, with serotonin, be it too much or too little in your body, looks clinically very similar. It can show anxiety, irritability,
Yeah. Wow.
but on both ends of that.
Yeah.
We've always got to be in that homeostasis. We've always got to be in that middle, that sweet spot.
Yeah, and trusting that, I think what you just said about the pharmacy, like I do a number of kind of breathwork activities and people like Wim Hof, right? He says we've got our own kind of inner pharmacy, like we are it, but we
Right.
can change our states by doing things that we naturally have, like walking barefoot on the grass, or we're going to some of the hippie stuff now, but changing the way that we breathe and stuff like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. For me, I need to be out in nature at some point every single day. Have to, because that's where I'm now grounded. That's where I connect. That's where my clarity comes from. That's where
Right.
my peace comes from. But there are so many things, and they don't cost money, that can be done. As you say, breath work. You know,
So
right there on the spot.
being the profession that you are, do you just accept intuitively that that's good for you, or do you look at that with a scientific mind and know that there's a scientific reason why those things are good for you?
Both.
Yeah.
I do it because that's what I already know works
Yeah.
for me, but I'd
Yeah.
love to be able to, because when I'm speaking, you know, you always have the naysayers. I love to be able to have the data
Yeah.
to back that up and say, and here's boom, boom, boom. If you don't believe me, here, do, 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 do. You know, and I'll say, just try it. Just, you know,
Yeah.
humor me.
So
Humor me.
what is the science of nature? Because I've got many people in my community, they're drawn to water. They're drawn to the coast, they're drawn to water, or they're drawn to woodlands. And I try and articulate that there's a scientific reason, something to do with like grounding, but I'm not the expert, so I'm not able to fully go, here's exactly why.
Right. I
Can you
mean,
help me with that?
The answer to everything we can see in nature, if we just stop and take the time and say, how does that work? And follow nature for everything, it slows people down. It opens up their minds, their brains. It changes our physiology, all these things that we're talking about, these neurotransmitters, these hormones. It changes the levels of all those. It brings that calm. And when you take something like being in nature at the same time, you're walking or you're running or whatever you're doing, you're physically exerting yourself. Now we're bringing these other chemicals into it. Now we're bringing these endorphins into it. And we see the beauty that's in nature. Now that dopamine response, is there sun out? That serotonin, that dopamine response, all of these things, we can change that resting state.
Well, there's even implications for people that live in block tower, flats or cities, or because you fundamentally change. If we realize that we're a goldfish in a goldfish bowl, we'd pay far more attention to the goldfish bowl, wouldn't we, really?
We would. Yeah,
We'd
we
look at
would.
our environment a whole lot more and go, oh, I wonder why my battery's feeling low.
Right, exactly. And you use the example of battery. You would never, someone that's addicted to their phone, right? They would never let that battery run down. Never, because they might miss something. But when it comes to you as a person, it's like, you know what? I'm just going. My battery's down, but what's the big deal? Why do I feel bad? I need to get on an antidepressant. Why am I feeling this bad? Well, look at what you're doing. So much of it is if we could just get out of our own way and let the body operate in its perfection, so much would change.
I interviewed one of the UK's leading biohackers a couple of years ago, and he basically came out with this one phrase. He says, if everybody's doing it's probably not a good thing. With cancer rates being nearly one in two, right,
True,
at some
true.
point. So he says, if everyone's doing it, and I think that made me think of the words cognitive dissonance. So many times the barriers to anything new like this can be, well, I don't need that because I'm no different from anybody else. Everybody else is doing it. And I think sometimes, like you said earlier, or we were talking about earlier, it's like having the courage or maybe even the curiosity to go, is this the way I'm meant to live? Is this conducive? Because so often we make judgments about ourselves, or at least remove the cognitive dissonance, i.e. the discomfort of, well, I could be doing something better, to, well, what everybody else is. And I've immediately shut myself off from the possibility that things don't have to be the way that they are.
Exactly. And that's a great point. And it's that inner truth that we're all told, it's whether we listen to it or not. And someone else's operating system may not be your operating system. You may have a different instruction manual that's supposed to come with you, but you're reading the other guy's instruction manual. And it's that having enough confidence, courage to say, what makes me operate at my best, and take the time to figure that out. We're so busy being everybody else other than ourselves. We're running after so and so, let me copy that. But we want to all be individuals. We are so contradictive, to how we're playing at our lives, that it's insanity. And then
Which
you
is,
wonder why you're not feeling the way you want to feel, because you're not living your life.
Where's the definition of insanity, isn't it? Is it Einstein said that's
Yep.
doing the
Doing the
same thing,
same thing
expected a
over
different
and above.
result?
Yeah. Expect a different result. You haven't changed anything. And also, as humans, we're looking for the easy way out of everything, the path of least resistance. What's the quick fix? And we've been taught that. If we go back to Dope Sick, we've been taught the easy fix, the easy fix, the easy fix. The easy fix isn't the answer for most things in life. It really isn't, regardless of the category we're talking about.
Like you said earlier, it removes the doing the work. There is an element on our part where we have to do the work. One of the things that I know you're passionate about is inspiring communities to talk openly about mental health, to talk about addiction from a solutions-oriented perspective. I'd love to kind of put the word shame in the middle. I think shame is a bit of a taboo. It's a bit of a barrier for some of these conversations about how do you hope conversations that communities can have conversations about these topics.
I think just hitting it right there. We're all human. We all have the same needs. We all have the same desires of what we want to get out of life. We all have the same fears, so we all sit here with some amount of shame for something. Let's bring that to the open and say, is that really shame? Do you need to move on? Were you sold into the idea that that's shame, or are you still carrying that? More importantly, how do we get past it? And just have that go right for the jugular. Let's go, open it up, and people will start to come out because it's not an accusatory. It's we're all the same. We're all human. This is not name calling. This is for a greater good of getting you to work your best. And if you're working your best, what happens to society? Right? One at a time, we change. And it's possible. And I try to inspire and motivate people to realize that it is possible to be living whatever is optimal for them, whatever they want out of life, that can actually happen. And just as important as everything else, surround yourself with people that are going to manifest that in you and keep you on that track instead of the people that are going to try to tear you down because they're still living in their own fear. And instead of doing the work of getting past it, they're going to bring you with them.
Yeah, the word possibility just really opens my heart and mind. It is, for me, a possibility is like an indication of what is really deep within our purpose. Like, what do we love to make possible? And I just love, I know where this is too personal, but I'd love to know your perspective on, you couldn't change the early years of your daughter and her relationship with her father, but knowing what you know now, like, I'd love to know how you've taken that possibility and just run with it with her.
Oh, sure. I am blessed truly to have a great kid and now woman who has her own children. But we always talked honestly. She was 3 years old and sitting on the potty of a three-year-old. And I said, Jackie, we have to talk about this. And she said, I said, we have to communicate. And she said, Mom, I don't want to communicate right now. A three-year-old. So it was, if there's always that.
Yeah, come on, Mom, respect my privacy.
Exactly. if there's always that honesty and truth and you know who's got your back, you can have those difficult conversations. You can have those conversations and navigate it together. It's that constant communication. If we said life is about communication, people go, boring, don't want to talk about that. But it is. Life is about how we communicate, whether we're communicating from our physiology to the outside world, whether we're communicating with the words we choose to the outside world, and both of those things to our inner world, right? It's always about communicating. And as humans, we all want the same thing. We all want to live every day. We all want to love every day. We all want to matter to ourselves, to the people around us. Everybody's after those exact same things. So if we're just honest with people, it removes that, oh, we're going to talk about this heavy duty stuff. No, we're all people here. Remove all the, I'm important, I'm important, I'm important. Sit here naked. You're all the same, right? And we all have these same needs. So how do we make our physiology the best it can be? How do we make our emotional state the best it can be? Our physiology has to be optimized to make our emotional state optimized. And you get people to understand and change that way of thinking. That's the hardest part because, as I said earlier, we're just sold the quick fix, the quick fix, the quick fix, and we never get the intended results.
I love that. I have a word here I always spent yesterday. It's called heartprint. And for me, the word symbolizes the ripple effect, the legacy, the one degree of possibility that we create in other people's lives. And, you're touching lives every day by the work that you're doing. I just wonder if you take a moment just to think about the end of your days and taking a look back at your life. Just what heartprint do you hope to leave?
I would want to know that I've touched people's lives in such a way that they're better for it. whether that be we identified lab results and here you're now operating in a different way, or whether we met and example, have you ever heard of the Camino, the Compostela de Santiago, the hike through southern France, Pyrenees Mountain, Spain? I did that hike, and you meet people along the way who will tell you everything about their lives, and you never know their name, you never see them again. But to be, that's a perfect analogy, to be able to touch someone's life that they remember, and it's within now their new imprint of that epigenetics that has changed as a result. I'm good. You know, that's what I'm here for. And everybody can do that little piece and share that. We can make changes.
I love that. I'm listening to the work of a lady called Dolores Cannon. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Dolores. She talks about like past life regressions. I'm not sure where I am mentally with some of those things, but she was talking about how some of our subconscious is still wired with these potential past lives, and how some of these kind of regression hypnosis can have us change. Maybe this is a whole different topic for another day, but just it just got me thinking just how like. Because for me, she was talking about this lady that had an interaction with Jesus back in Jerusalem. She had this one interaction, and this one interaction seemed to change her genetic or her entire spirit in the regression, and then came back different. I don't know whether that's played out within her genetic makeup, but it's just that I think I guess what it leaves space in me is that there is so much stuff that we all as individuals don't know, and as we learn, it's such an invitation just to learn. For me, all of what you're talking about, if it's coded in our DNA, that's an expression of the divine. For me, I think, you know, as a manifester, for me, God is an animating spirit. So for as long as my body is animated by something, I'm learning about the divine with every conversation I'm having with you
Absolutely.
and with everybody else.
Absolutely. This is a gift that we've been given, and we're manifesting every day that gift. And I have the same belief system. And I think that's also what drives me to try to get people to understand that, of, you know, without force feeding anything, that this is a gift, and you are uniquely you. And you're supposed to be uniquely you.
To your fullest
Operate.
expression.
Exactly. Operate at your best expression that you can. And that's a life well lived. And it's that understanding that it's uniquely you, and it's supposed to be. It's not supposed to be everybody else that you see on social media. You know, it's not so, and probably opening up a whole can of worms that we can't touch here, Ryan, because you would need so much more time. But that whole thing is just, talk about a manifestation of trying to be someone who you're not. Oh, and then all that does to mental health and the younger people, because they don't know enough of where they are yet to be firm in their conviction of, I don't need to be you, I'm me.
Yes, lack, separation, comparison, and then it
Absolutely.
messes with. I have a belief that, you know, I talk about heart-centered leadership, and I have a belief that one of the most. So Psalm 23 starts with, "The Lord is my shepherd; I have all that I need." And I believe that's a heart-set statement. That is a belief that comes from within. That means I have all that I need; I lack nothing. The social world tries to work on the inversion of that, which is that you
Right.
lack something, and I have the very source of that. If you
Right.
just come out and get some of these things, energy in a drink, beauty in a product, you know, that's the way, and that's kind of where I was going earlier when I said about culture. Culture disconnects us from that which is in here and divine. So yeah, I could have this conversation with you all afternoon, all morning, but I want to be super respectful of your time. Is there anything about your work that I've not specifically highlighted that you'd particularly love to share?
No, I think you had a great perspective of really giving your listeners an idea of what we do, and most importantly, that it doesn't have to be fixed. Things can change for the better.
I love that. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for all your work. And I'd be honored if you'd leave us a final thought from your good self.
Live your life. We all want those same things. We all want love. We all want a life. We all want to matter. So go every day and do those things so you play them out. They're not just words, right? Live it so you matter. What, you know, you're to yourself, to the others that you meet. If you just did that every day, how do I make my life better and other people that I meet along the way? You would be so happy with yourself. You would have all of these neurotransmitters, these SNPs operating optimally. And that's what we're here for.
Beautiful. Dr. Evelyn, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure, Ryan. Thank you.
Hey, my friends, thank you for making it to the end. I hope that our time spent together today has left you a little bit better than before you push play. I'd really appreciate if you just took a moment to leave a review to allow me to meet more people where they are and hopefully leave them a little bit better too. If you're curious to know how I, through Always Better Than Yesterday, can serve you, your team, your organization, then head to alwaysbetterthanyesterday.com to connect. And while you're there, let me know one or two things that you're going to do as a result of listening to this conversation. I absolutely love hearing your thoughts, your reflections, and the things that this spark in your own heart and mind. If you want more insights from my heart and mind, I do send out short episodes on a Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. And again, I hope that they serve you well. I appreciate you listening. I'm Ryan Hartley, host of the Always Better Than Yesterday podcast, a podcast for heart-centered leaders just like you. Keep leading, my friends. Always love.